Hello again, and welcome to Jaded Gamercast.
Dude, did you forget the name of the show already?
No, it's funny because when I go back and I edit this stupid thing, I always notice that I speak in kind of the clipped Kirk-esque type voice where I'm just like, "Welcome to Jaded Gamercast," and I'm just like listening to myself as I'm editing, going like, "Why the fuck am I talking so weird? Like, I can't do an intro without talking like I'm trying to sell a vacuum or something, you know?" It's kind of frustrating. So, but anyways, hey everybody, welcome to Jaded Gamercast. See, if I could open like that, I'd be in good shape. See, I think it'll be the day that we actually get through an intro without fucking it up in some way where it's just like, "See, we're unprofessional. This is an unprofessional podcast, everybody. Welcome to the Unprofessional Podcasting Network."
But to be fair, the definition of a professional is someone who gets paid, so we will forever be that two-bit amateur production.
Done and done. You can't get paid professionally to be a jaded gamer, so I guess that's the way that it works. But again, welcome everybody to the show. This is our ninth episode? Eighth?
Eighth that we're posting, ninth
Yes,
that we've
okay.
recorded.
Yeah, we had that one. We have our backup episodes. So this is our eighth episode of Jaded Gamercast, and as some of you may have noticed on the Facebook page, we did tell everybody to pick up this month's issue of The White Dwarf from good old Papa Games Workshop. And the topic for today's podcast, which we will get to after Higher Learning, is The White Dwarf and our feelings on it. And there is absolutely sure to be a lot of extra jaded gamer coming out in this episode, but we'll go ahead and forego that and get right into our Higher Learning segment, which today is
Demons of Chaos for Fantasy.
Demons of Chaos for Fantasy. Good times, good times. You either love them or you hate them or you hate them.
Honestly, I think
Oh, wait.
eighth
Oh,
edition.
sorry. Yes, I am drinking scotch, Nathan.
I am drinking beer this evening.
All right, good enough. All right, I just felt like we shouldn't glaze over the exceptionally alcoholic nature of this podcast.
There is a reason that the website has that warning on every one of them.
There's a reason for that. Okay, so going on.
No, going on, I was just going to say that I think 8th edition core rule sets fixed a lot of the things that people hated about Demons of Chaos. And so now it's either the love or hate camp without that extra, like, burning rage of a thousand dying suns kind of rage. And for those of you that aren't familiar, in 7th edition, Demons of Chaos were the army that people would play if they were assholes. Straight up, there was no other reason to play Demons of Chaos because they broke the game so badly that unless you were playing against another demon player, you were guaranteed the win. Absolutely nothing could happen aside from, a curable, a horrible dice plague.
Well, I mean, it was the army that kind of was, we talked about the Leaf Blower army at one point for Warhammer 40,000, and this was kind of the very similar army for Warhammer Fantasy with the demons. It was the Epidemius Plague Nurgle list in 7th edition that it just walked over people, and there were other permutations of that and other variations of that where it was dedicated to, a specific god, but the list was just insane and the rules were just insane. And like you say, a lot of the changes to composition for 8th edition did solve those problems. So right now I feel like demons are still very competitive, but the upper echelon of uber competitive gamer has kind of brushed them to the side now in favor of Lizardmen and Skaven.
Yeah, no, like I said, I do agree because, I mean, that's the thing is with compositions, you can no longer cram a 800 point greater demon into a 2000 point game, which is fantastic. And forcing core on people means you no longer have the 3 10 man units of compulsory core followed by an army of flamers and flesh hounds of Khorne because yeah, they were so good. Why wouldn't you?
Exactly. I mean, the models in the Demon Army are actually very, very nice. They're well sculpted. They're mostly all up to date. We've said it a few times. The new Demon Prince plastic is a great model. The Greater Demons are always very, very cool models. The Forge World versions of the greater demons were just phenomenal. You know, like if this was another one of those armies, and we even kind of touched on it back when we were talking about the Bretonians, this is another one of those armies that is like a show army. If you really put the time and the effort into making these guys look nice, they will look gorgeous. Like they really will stand out on a table and you'll win a lot of like best painted or you'll get really high painting scores. But in terms of composition, in terms of kind of the way the list is built, I kind of feel like it does push aside fluff to an extent because, you know, there's not the balance that other armies have playing like a fluff related list, you know, and I mean that as in being dedicated to one specific god, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it comes down to kind of what we were talking about with our mailbag episode where sort of fluff armies don't get taken anymore. And this is one of those books where it almost penalizes you for taking a fluff army.
I would say it really does penalize. I wouldn't even say almost.
Yeah, fair enough. Because, I mean, if you choose to dedicate yourself to a single god, you end up having sort of this one-trick pony aspect. You know, because if you go Slaanesh, you're going to go Leadership Bomb because there's really nothing else.
You said one-trick pony ass.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
I'm not even drunk yet. Good times.
Yet. You know, but I mean, it's just like you are penalizing yourself if you do choose to run a fluff-based list because the book was balanced internally, you know. And what I mean by that is just like, you know, when they playtested the Demon book as a book by itself rather than a part of the whole Warhammer Fantasy universe, all the balance exists in there to say you're going to take these multiple gods. You know, hey, you need to chew through a horde of guys, you need Demonettes of Slaanesh with Always Strike First. Oh, Heavy Knights, you need Blood Letters. Oh, mm-hmm. You know, Magic, you should take Horrors with a Herald because right. Now you've got two wizards casting on it. And
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's just there is that balance if you choose to mix and match the gods. But I mean, if you don't, like if you choose to not run units of Horrors of Tzeentch, you and really anything of Tzeentch, your wizards are ungodly expensive.
Right.
You know, like it's just like now all of a sudden you basically forego a magic phase and you right. forego a shooting phase and you're mm-hmm. just like, oh. So
yeah, I agree with you 100% there. I love the Demons of Chaos book. I liked the Demons of Chaos better when Beastmen and Chaos and like Mortals were all part of the same book. I mean, I understand why they split them into three, but I feel like now you're kind of looking at three very, I don't know, either.
Well, I find the Warriors of Chaos sit well by themselves to say, okay, you know, there's yeah. enough humans with the Norsemen and the Warriors.
But they're
and,
so
you know,
bland.
Yeah.
Like, you can give them the marks, but it doesn't matter. Like, they're just, it's a bland army, in my opinion. I think the models are nice. It's just, you put them together, and it's like, eh, da, da, da. I'm going to take Warriors, and, you know, I'm going to take a horde of Marauders, and, you know, Marauder Horsemen are pointless, and, you know, it just, you pretty much go down the list, and every army looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me, that's kind of what kills me about it was, you know, back in the original book, the Mortals were your core. They were your mainstay. Those were the guys that you built your army on. If you really wanted to go heavy fluff, you could still play all of these separate different types of armies and do relatively well. And, you know, if you wanted to mix and match, you could really have like a solid, balanced, fun army, and you could dedicate it to a specific god and still make it work. You could still mix and match, or I'm sorry, you could still dedicate and play the fluff-based army and make it work by mixing Mortals and Demons and Beastmen, right? It worked, but I, you know, we talked about Beastmen before just kind of being like, they just lack in quite a few aspects that it's hard to look at that army competitively and say like, yeah, absolutely, they're right where they need to be. I kind of feel like, you know, the jaded gamer in me screams like, why change a good thing? Like, it was so good. I was ready to build that army, and now it's like, there's no point.
Yeah, you know, and I do agree with you because I mean, having played in that era of being able to sort of mix and match, and some of the most impressive looking armies as well as most effective armies were the ones that sort of took that little sampling of, you know, beasts for sort of that raiding fast element that's going to scream up because they're flankers that get rank bonuses, old rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with rock solid Warriors of Chaos, you know, forming your mainstay lines, and then demons filling in the holes, whether that be Furies to sort of fast cav hunt, you know, or artillery hunting, or you know, big blocks of other demons to actually be combat units. It really ended up being an army that really complemented itself, and then they took all of these elements out, and it feels like with the Demons of Chaos book, they overcompensated, making things too good. Because they're like, well, without Warriors of Chaos, these demons are crap, so we got to make demons way better.
Mm-hmm.
And they really overcompensated. And then it felt like, you know, Warriors of Chaos, like I said, I do think that they got that book relatively right in terms of a balanced perspective. I do agree with you that a lot of the fluff is, like a lot of the flavor kind of gets watered down. But then the pendulum kept swinging, and then you have Beastmen who kind of came out on the exact opposite end of Demons, where they're like, right, we can't make another Demons of Chaos book, so we're going to tone everything down, and we're going to make a haphazard list that doesn't raid as well as it used to and doesn't run up the board as fast as it used to, you know. And so, I mean, it's just, it really feels like they took this well-balanced, well-oiled machine and then kind of had a shotgun blast that ended up all over the place.
Mm-hmm. So if you were going to play a Demons of Chaos list, what would you do? What god would you follow, or would you fall into the realm of, you know, just make it competitive and mix and match, and what's done is done?
You know, I probably would never do a Demons of Chaos army, but if I was, I'd mix and match for the painting of it. I mean, I love Slaanesh, and so, I mean, Demonettes are fun to paint. They've grown on me. They're still not as good as the old metal models, but they're not bad. Not bad looking kits. And I would also want to paint up some of the new plastic horrors, because they're really nice. I'd probably pick up a Forge World Greater Demon, either the Great Unclean one or the Zinch one. I'm drawing a blank on what it's called. Changer of Ways, I think.
I don't know. Yeah, the Changer of some of the Ways of Wings.
Yeah, lots
Wings,
of
Wings. Wings, Beaky Face, man, with the staff.
That's right.
Yep, that one. The skinny one, that doesn't look like it could do shit.
Yeah, that one. And, you know, so I mean, like I said, I'd probably go around and I'd just do an army of shit I like to paint, because I think demons have some beautiful models, from the blood crushers to the horrors to demonettes.
Right, right.
And that's really all I would do if I were to do a Demons of Chaos army. But honestly, I have no desire.
Yeah. See, I would go across the other end of the spectrum there, and I would dedicate it to Nurgle and just do like an all Nurgle list. But you know, if I really wanted the list to be competitive, I would have to probably convert up some units to make them Nurgle and play them Nurgle, but, you know, like use the rules for, you know, blood crushers or something like that, and just, you know, like, ah, here's my Nurgle blood crushers, you know what I mean? Because it's just, doing it that way is just, you're either trying to over cheese on, you know, special characters and trying to, like, stack abilities and, you know, play in this very narrow space where, you know, you can beat 2/3 of the armies you play, but it's a massacre against everyone else. Or kind of try to balance it out with you know, fluff-wise dedicating it to one specific god. But speaking of chaos, on the cover of this month's White Dwarf, you like that segue, don't you? On the cover of this month's White Dwarf, we have a Bretonian knight on foot with a glowy blue lightsaber attacking a, I'm going to go ahead and say, hairless Wookiee.
I think it's supposed to be a Slaanesh demon.
Yeah, it's got to be Slaanesh, dude.
But
it doesn't have nearly enough breasts to be like a big demonette, but we're going to have to assume it's Slaanesh.
Indeed. No, I mean, you know, you look at the cover and you kind of get excited, and as long as you never open it up and you can live with that excitement.
Okay, so, you know, after one of the episodes that Nathan and I had, we talked about, you know, hey, you know, like, have you picked up a White Dwarf anytime recently? And I told him, honestly, I stopped reading it even back when I was working for Games Workshop. I mean, it... You know, when I, and that was when I was getting them for free, they would sit on my desk and I wouldn't even touch them. It had gotten to the point where I just, the book held no interest to me unless somebody actually said to me, oh, hey, did you hear, like, oh, there's rules for Rhinox Riders in this issue. Then I'd go read that particular part, and, you know, you pretty much just, you know, had the White Dwarf
for the cliff notes that you got from other people or for the odd rules or things of that nature that you used to get. And before we actually get into this issue and start talking about what they have in here this month, let's talk a little bit about how it used to be or how we kind of remember it being. You know, for me, the White Dwarf, when I first started getting into the hobby, was just a wealth of information and ideas that I really hadn't even thought about. You know, the battle reports were interesting. They really felt like, you know, oh, I can get some strategy out of this. Like, I feel like I can do things properly, you know. I would learn something from the issues that I would read, and they would be broken up into certain sections where, you know, if something appealed to me, I would read it. And if it didn't, I would just, you know, glaze over it really quickly and move on to the next thing, you know. But usually I would pick up an issue and there would be 3-4 things in the issue that would be worth the read. You know, you could sit down, read them front to back and say, you know, that was a good article. It applied to me. I'm happy with what it was, you know. It moved away from that almost in like a pitfall. I mean, it came out of nowhere. There was always the odd issue of the White Dwarf that you would say to somebody like, ah, it's not that great. It's just a lot of, you know, it's kind of filler this week. It's, or this month, you know, it's got a couple issues if you play this, or I'm sorry, a couple articles if you play this army, or if you're doing this kind of a tournament or something. But, you know, there would always be the odd issue that just wasn't very good. It was just, you know, the stuff in between the good stuff. And then all of a sudden, it was like 4 or 5 issues in a row where you were just like, yeah, it's not a great issue. And it got to the point where it almost became a source of, like, just a source of soreness for veteran gamers, you know. It was pandering. It was patronizing. It was, you know, just very simple, and like things started getting really obvious, like the battle reports were all fixed, and it was just like, you know, like there was just, like, why would I read a battle report when it's just at, you know, oh, the new army that came out won a game again, woohoo, you know.
No, see, my favorite on that one though is right when the new Dwarf army book came out, right before 7th edition.
Yeah.
They even talked about how the one they published
was the fourth game they'd played.
Yeah, it was the fourth game they played, because it was Dwarfs versus Ogres. Dwarfs were the new army book. Mm-hmm. And in the first 3 games, the Ogre player walked all over the Dwarf player. Yeah. Murdered him to a man.
Notice how they never said that again in the White Dwarf.
No, they didn't. And then it was finally the fourth game that the Dwarves pick up a win. And that's the one that they publish. And they talk about, hey, yo, Dwarves are great. Dwarves are this and Dwarves are that. But even that, in fact, wasn't really well advertised. You had to read basically the entire battle report front to back, and it was midway through like the defeat from the Ogre player,
right,
where he was just like, yeah, you know, well, you know, it was the fourth game, I won the first 3, but you know, things happen, right? It's
right.
A dice game, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. No, but you know, like, everyone had an inkling that that was the case beforehand, and at that point it just became fact when, you know, the editor let that one slip through. But, you know, like, there would be articles, like Tactica articles, that were so ridiculous. And you could almost even tell that the guys writing them could give a shit. You know, like, hey, you have to write a Tactica article for the Dark Eldar this week. And, you know, the guy's just like, Dark Eldar, you know, fuck. And then that was the worst Tactica I'd ever seen. Dark Eldar players were, like, enraged, primarily you and I. because
couldn't do anything else after reading it, because
we were
basically
so mad. We were ready to call head office and just be like, yeah, what are you guys doing?
All right. First of all, the guy was blatantly cheating in it, where he was just like, oh, just do this and this and this. And he's just like, the rules don't say you can't. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah. So like, he starts off by saying like, you want to win? Loopholes, my friend, loopholes, you know?
You know, And then when he was just like, oh, you know, this is how Dark Eldar match up. It's just like, if you match up against a 3+ army, you know, lick your chops, you can't lose. If you match up against Eldar or Tau, it'll be a hard fight. If you match up against Tyranids or Orcs or Imperial Guard, you can't win. Just try to play for a draw. And I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, when that's the Tactica, finger quotes, advice that you're giving to players, how the hell are you going to... And I mean, obviously, they only did that article because they're just like, oh, we've got enough mail from people saying, give us some fucking Dark Eldar. And then they put this thing out, and like, the guide's list is retarded. He builds this list, and he's like, Incubi, don't take them. They're worthless. And you're just like, what? Oh my god, like...
Well, and then he's like, there's nothing that there's nothing an Archon can do that two Drakons can't do better. And I'm just like, wait, what? Why wouldn't you just pay 15 points and take an Archon and a Drakon?
It's just, like, it was just the most ridiculous piece of tactica. And, I mean, like, it wasn't just the Dark Eldar one. There was an Orc tactica that was just absolute garbage. Any Marine tactica you ever saw was just, like, you just put your models down and win. You know, like, it wasn't even a tactica. It was just, like, here's how I like to use Whirlwinds, you know?
Yeah.
It was just, it was like our higher learning segment, but they actually took it seriously.
You know, but like our higher learning segment, they never bothered to pick up the codex before writing it.
Ah, true. Very, very true. Okay, so let's get into the White Dwarf. Now, you said that you'd kind of skimmed it. I went a little deeper. I'm going to go ahead and say that I was hopeful when I picked it up. I looked at the cover, the size had changed, it, you know, like it had a good weight to it. But, you know, like it all looked pretty good. I open it up. I see the thing that I enjoyed most about the White Dwarf was the new releases. They've got the Knights of the Blazing Sun Command Pack, which looks pretty cool. I think that it's actually really cool that they're starting to put out a little bit more fluff-oriented type stuff as, like, blisters from mail order, which is kind of cool. And then it devolves into terrain. More terrain.
Well, and the worst part is this isn't even new terrain. The Fortress of Redemption came out last year at Christmas time. Right. The Fortified Manor came out the year before. So you're just wait, what are you talking about?
Okay, well, let me say this then.
Oh, and the Imperial Sector came out when both of us worked at Games Workshop.
Okay, but let me say this, and actually I'm gonna add on to it with something that you just said that kind of hit me. My overall feeling of the White Dwarf is it doesn't feel like the monthly hobbyist magazine. It feels like my Games Workshop monthly catalog. It's like the Sears catalog that you get, and all they're doing is they're just like, you should buy this. Look how nice it looks in your house, you know? And, you know, one of my first feelings when I was going through it was like, oh, this is what I remember about the White Dwarf. Like, the terrain always looks so fucking good. You know, you always want to aspire to the terrain that you see in the White Dwarf. And then as I kept turning the pages, it was just like, Jesus Christ, terrain, two articles on terrain, eight pages on terrain. I'm just like, fuck me. Like, you know, it really just felt like the Games Workshop catalog. No, since it is the December issue, I guess that it's very reasonable to say that they are doing a little bit more hard selling in this issue than they normally would be. However, like, it was off-putting, you know. I skipped so many pages just because I don't care, you know. They just sit there and talk about terrain, and they're just like, this terrain looks like this. And it's like four paragraphs about, like, here's how you make a table that looks like a ruined city. Hooray, you know. But, like, the first ton of pages, Black Library, they're talking about new books that are coming out, digital Black Library, new books coming out, more new stuff coming out. Games Workshop website stuff coming out. And then we get to Trial of Champions. We had kind of talked about the fact that the battle reports were fixed. Politically motivated, so to say. And, you know, reading these three battle reports in a row, I stand by that assumption. I mean, the War of the Ring, I mean, neither of us really play War of the Ring. I mean, so for me, I look at the battle report and I think to myself, like, okay, could have gone either way. I don't really get, you know, one way or the other, but sure, you know, the bad guys win. Hey, why not? That's fine with me. They kind of go into the battle report. They show the armies. Everything looks very, fantastic on the table. The terrain is all excellent, you know. But by the end of the game, the Isengard Marauders have won the game. Okay, sure. I think that, you know, whatever. Your feelings on that, Nathan? It's War of the Ring.
Yeah, basically I skip Lord of the Rings because I don't play the game. And there's really no point in me reading it because I don't understand what they're doing. I don't understand the intricacies of the rules. So knowing it's a dice game and knowing that Games Workshop loves close combat, I'm just like, yeah, I know that they need to run at each other and hit each other, and then hopefully dice will be rolled and shit will happen.
Super duper. So moving on, we get to the battle for the Witch Fate Tour, which is a Watchtower scenario
in which we have Chaos versus Dwarves, and this is one of the stupidest Chaos armies I've ever seen. And in terms of deployment, it is ridiculous. I mean, this deployment is so heavily favoring the Dwarves that it's just like, you know, he's set up on the best side of the table. He's set up in such a way that he's got an open flank that literally is just never attacked. You know, he puts two organ guns on the flank. And what does the Chaos Warrior do to deal with that flank of organ guns? He puts a little bitty unit of hounds on that side, Nathan, to take care of them. Guess what happens to the hounds?
Do they win?
Well, they ran, and then they rallied, and then he basically walked them around the back of the table so that by the end of the game they could have done nothing. So, if you're looking at the White Dwarf, you will look at the Orc deployment, or the Dwarf deployment, and you will say to yourself, that is a smart deployment. Unfortunately, you'll look at the Chaos deployment, and you'll kind of wonder, what the hell is this person thinking?
Well, my personal favorite is him taking like his hoarded up unit of warriors and putting them basically on his board edge.
No, that's not a horde. That is not a horde. That's an 8 frontage.
Why wouldn't you? You know, I'm not going to ask questions.
No. That's. I think that's an exceptionally valid point, because I was looking at that going like, if you're going to make a frontage of 8, why the hell didn't you just make that a unit like a full horde of 40? Why are you taking a frontage like this terribly unmaneuverable frontage of 8? You know.
Well, and I can see from the army list on the next page, he talks about how it's 30 Chaos Warriors, and it's clear he throws 2 characters in to get that 8x4. But why wouldn't you just go 10x3, have everybody attacking except for 2 guys to the back?
The knight's unit is ridiculous. He's got 4x2, and he tosses in his Corn Lord on it. So he doesn't even get a rank, but he has them lined up as a rank, which is super special. And then he's got like a 10-man unit with great weapons, and he's got like Marauder Horsemen and like a little 5-man units of Warhound. Like, it's just the whole list is really stupid.
It's just very clear that entire list is everything the studio has painted, just tried to make it work, whereas the Dwarf list is actually a pretty solid,
pretty hard-hitting list. Dwarf list.
You know, that unit of Slayers is despicable. Like, you look at it,
I was going to get to that,
frontage. Like, that's a phenomenal unit because they're unbreakable.
That is a good thing to know, because as you turn the page, you will realize that this Chaos player has no idea that Dwarf Slayers are unbreakable. Because the first thing he does is charge his unit of Khorne Knights with his Lord character right up into the Slayers.
So all the Slayers get to attack, and they get to pick great weapons, which choose them apart, because that's an easy kill for the Dwarves.
Oh, no. The guy totally doesn't choose great weapons. He just chooses double hand weapons. But, of course, the Chaos...
Oh, so that way they still get a 2-plus armor save, like a retard.
They still get a 2-plus armor save, but it sets up the Quarrelers for the perfect flank charge, because, hey, guess what? You charged an unbreakable unit of 30. You don't have 30 attacks. You can't break an unbreakable unit if you don't have even as many attacks as the unit has models in it, for fuck's sake. I mean, you're putting your biggest, most points-heavy unit out in the middle of the table with no support, 12 inches away from anything, so that it can get flank charged and torn to bits. But let's talk about the dogs. Unbelievably, they rally and, like, run around the back of the table, but hey, guess what? This sets the Dwarf player up, too, and if you follow the arrows there on the little map, you can see that he moves his 2 organ guns up on top of the hill, flanking the tower that the guy has to take, so that he can basically unload the organ guns on the awesomely unarmored Horde of Marauders next turn. And what does the Horde of Marauders do?
They take it to the face.
They stand in front of the organ guns. It's just like this entire battle report is ridiculous. The Dwarf player is in the perfect position the entire way through. He has a great list, and he basically gets everything his way. It would basically be like if you or I played an 8-year-old with ADD, where he's just like, I like that one, and that one, and that one, and he can't decide what he wants, so he takes a little bit of everything, and then he didn't read his rule book all the way.
Yeah.
So anyways, surprise, surprise, come turn 3 and 4,
Chaos units are fleeing all over the table. The dwarf character has barely taken losses, and all of his artillery is just skull-fucking the chaos army, because the chaos army basically tries to like hack the tower down or something stupid like that. So the game ends, and it is like a full-on rout massacre where like like the knights get away, you know, like the knights get away, like they work their way out of the combat. But even that, I'm just like, no, that didn't happen. I'm sorry, it didn't happen. You didn't turn around and then burn his way through half the unit. It's just like, hey, you know, let's not have my lord and everything on my, you know, my a quarter of my army list all of a sudden be dead in the first two turns. So let's just say that they win. None of it makes any sense. It's really ridiculous. Moving on. The 40K battle report is similarly awesome. Similarly awesome. Oh, and by the way, if anybody notices that we are wrong about any of these details, it's because, yeah, we didn't read it that far in.
As I said, I skim it because there isn't enough substance for me to waste my time on reading it.
Yeah. So, Nathan.
Yes.
Can Necrons beat Imperial Guard?
If they're using their cheaty battle mission scenarios that stack the odds in their favor, then they should be able to pull out a draw. Unless your Imperial Guard player is inbred, in which case he should be able to fuck it up.
So, cheaty battle scenario number one is ambush. Hey, why not, right? Ambush.
Yeah, I mean, hey, what is better than starting every Necron in rapid fire range? I mean, how do they lose?
Pretty much. But even on top of that, the Necron list, I'm going to say, like, it's not terrible. The guy did build Necron heavy. He's not pissing around with stupid shit like Immortals and Flayed Ones and crap like that. That's just pointless to take. He's got a lot of Destroyers, Immortals, Warriors, Tomb Spiders, and a couple of Wraiths, and a Monolith. So, I mean, the relatively competitive Necron list. So at least he's doing it right-ish. The Imperial Guard list is pretty straightforward, you know. Lots of vehicles, lots of artillery, lots of ordnance, lots of shooting. They've got one Sentinel in there, which I think is hilarious. I don't think I've ever seen anybody take one Sentinel. And here is my one Sentinel with autocannon. Why didn't you just take an autocannon? Because Sentinel with an autocannon.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's 45 points. So, I mean, even there is no guard player in the world that would say, hey, you know what? I have 50 points left. Let's take one extra kill point that is painfully easy to get.
Oh, shit.
They would just be like, sweet, so I'm going to buy a power weapon for this guy, and this guy, and we're done.
Yeah, pretty much. So, the guard list, again, it looks pretty strong. Lots of heavy weapons, lots of shooting, lots of units, lots of vehicles, lots of ordnance. Honestly, this list should have no problem demolishing Necrons.
You know what? With three ordnance templates that kill Necrons in twos and prevent any of them that are outside of their resorb from standing back up, like, it should be a cakewalk.
It should be a cakewalk. But guess what, Nathan? The Necrons win. First turn, they...
hold on. Don't tell me that this idiot guard player does not condense all of his infantry platoons to cut down on his...
splits him up. Doesn't charge.
Yay! So let's give him 6 kill points instead of 2.
He loses almost all of his vehicles in, like, one round. The Monolith is untouchable. And, pretty much the Commissar charges some warriors. Blah, 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 bullshit. I have to laugh because they're even like, tank of the match is the Monolith. Well-deserved reputation is one of the toughest, most dangerous vehicles in Warhammer 40,000. In this game, it laid waste to a Lehman Russ, a Hellhound, blasted apart handfuls of Imperial Guardsmen, and shielded a warrior phalanx. All in a day's work.
Hey, everybody, quick, run out and buy an $85 plastic kit.
Everybody go out and
buy two.
Buy three.
You know what? Yeah, your army can run three.
So anyways,
Battle reports. Garbage. Not even really worth reading. Very disappointing. And I mean, like, that was the bright shining star of just like, oh, I'm finally out of the marketing phase of this book, you know? And then the battle reports were all kind of disappointing. And, you know, I start reading them and it gets to the point where I'm just like, and I'm done. I was almost done before I started just because looking at the lists, it was just like, this is stupid. As soon as I saw Guard versus Necrons, I was just like, ah, Necrons are going to win. Why? Because they want to sell some more Necrons.
Well, yeah, totally. Because, I mean, especially when you put them up against a top seller like Guard. Because, I mean, really, Guard are second to a Marine army in terms of sales.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody loves them. They're humans with las guns.
You can't go wrong. So this is where we get into actually a little bit of interest. It's a bit of fluff, which is nice. You know, a little bit of expanded fluff for the Dark Eldar, talking about the various cabals and the stories behind them and the color schemes and the banners and things
and
of
you
that
know what?
Nature.
This is you know, vintage White Dwarf at its
yes.
finest, too.
Yes, it
because,
is.
You know, vintage White Dwarf was all about expanding the fluff. I mean, yes. if you can find somebody that has White Dwarfs from the Eye of Terror campaign way back when.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Get your hands on them and read them cover to cover, because I think they did like 4 or 5 or maybe even 6 issues total for the lead up, the actual campaign, and then the wrap up. And I mean, they're works of art, and I really can't call them anything else, because the attention to detail, the expanded story, the added gameplay elements, absolutely everything about it was just brilliant. And I mean, this is kind of like a throwback, because basically you're right. They're they are saying, look, here are some people, here are some cabals, look at this fluff, look at all of this. And it's great for, hold on, how many pages is it? 2, 4.
Oh, we get about 5 or 6 pages.
7.
Seven
you
pages.
Get 7 pages and then the 1 page of picture. So it's an 8-page segment. And that is it out of our 120-page total. That is Vintage White Dwarf, and is just excellent reading. So what are we at, 1% of the magazine, less than 1?
We're getting there. Turning the next page, we hit to the spearhead. This is the Warhammer 40,000 Tactica.
Okay, first of all, spearhead was a terrible idea. Okay, yeah, because see Lang, you haven't read White Dwarf.
No. Nope.
Spearhead was a terrible game, Warhammer 40,000 expansion that no one I've ever met has ever played. Because basically it was Games Workshop's attempt at selling tanks.
Yeah.
So what they did is they made this expansion that said that you can, in addition to your army, add in a spearhead. And this spearhead is all tanks or monstrous creatures if you don't have tanks. And then you can play games with it. And the rules are only found in the White Dwarf and then posted online a month later.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess they must have looked at the White Dwarf sales and went, man, people still didn't want it. And, And yeah, so now they're giving you a Tactica to an expansion that nobody I've ever met has played. Honestly, when it came out online, there wasn't even a splash on the forum world.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think Bell of Lost Souls ran 2 articles, one saying, hey, everybody, Spearhead is out, and then one breaking it down. And then basically just saying, hey, there's really no reason to ever play it. Because, I mean, really, who has the money to in addition to their army, because this is an expensive hobby, then go out and buy 5 battle tanks at $60 a pop just to play with this silly expansion?
I understand how somebody might find it interesting, but like you say, I don't know anybody who would find it interesting. I mean, I feel like yes, it is just a marketing device for selling more tanks. And it was funny, it was something I listened to recently. Where somebody said, like, just remember, television is just a medium for selling you things. You know, these shows and everything that they put on, as much as we like to say that it's a form of artwork or it's drama or whatever it is, it's there so that they can sell commercials. You know, it's there so that they can sell airtime. It's a form of making money. That's all it is. You know, we love it. And the best thing about it is the PVR that allows us to skip the commercials. This is where I would be skipping the commercials. The next, like, 4 or 5 pages of, you know, hey, everybody, look how awesome this is. Like, oh, here's another battle report, you know, Lord of the Rings. Oh, man, there's another expansion or another advertisement for, like, the old box set that came out 6 years ago. Here's some more stuff that's talking about, like, you know, same old, same old. Finally, we get to the Tower of Sorcery. It's a Warhammer scenario, which is
kind of interesting. Did you take a good look at this?
No, I didn't. Honestly, I hadn't skimmed this far in. By this point, I was just like, and I'm done.
Yeah, it's Watchtower Extra. It's basically a Watchtower scenario where you're actually playing where you deploy on the short table edges as opposed to the long table edges. And the Watchtower has various levels where if a mage is in them, imagine the Watchtower like a TARDIS, right? Yes. See, I know you've been watching Doctor Who, so I was going to toss that
yes,
in. Imagine the Watchtower like a TARDIS, where basically it's a lot bigger on the inside than it looks like on the outside. Because the rules for this fucking thing is basically, like, there's all these different levels, and, like, people can get in there and assault it, and, like, units of any size can get into the Watchtowers on various level unless they're large targets. So it's like, you know, you can fit 40 guys on this one little bitty level that could fit like 5 or 6 spaces, you know? So I like, it's the TARDIS. It's basically just, it's just Watchtower with random game length and this wacky victory condition for like however many floors of the Watchtower you
look, have. You know what? I'm going to go out and say this right now, because I've played a lot of games and I've been to a lot of tournaments. When you have 7 paragraphs of special rules.
Yep. That was my next point.
No one is going to get through them all. And if they do get through them all, they're going to forget them the moment they start rolling dice and actually thinking about the tactics and the strategy.
Or ignore them outright.
Or actually, you know, sorry, I'll take that back. Apparently 8th edition has no tactics and strategy because it's just a dice game.
It's just a random dice game.
Yes. So, I mean, like, that's the point is I'm just like, you know, you've got to be kidding me. Like, how can you make a scenario with 7 paragraphs of special rules and expect people to have this white dwarf out open on the page so they can keep referring back and going, God, I think I remember something about that. And have their rule book and have their army book. And it's just, it's just stupid.
So, you know, here's another battle report. Apparently.
Are you fucking kidding
me? Oh no, I'm not kidding you. By the end of the book, you're literally saying like, it's just a catalog, right? Like this is just the Games Workshop catalog where they give you battle report after battle report. But no, all it is they're just trying to sell you scenery. So they just keep making these tables. And you turn the page and it's just like, hey, everybody, look, more scenery. Oh, hey, everybody, look, more scenery, more scenery. Turn the page again. Hey, look, more scenery, everybody. Look how awesome scenery
is. It's a picture of a battle with scenery. Oh, my God.
Next page, we're up to page 86. More scenery, more scenery, more scenery. Hey, High Elves. Okay, we're almost at the end of the book here. And it looks like... who is it? Matt Hudson is going to build a High Elf army. Are you on that page?
I am.
That is a stupid fucking High Elf army.
Well, what do you mean? He's got the starter set. He's got one chariot box. So he's got the starter set of the battalion.
Yep.
One box of the plastic of the new White Lions. One box of... No, he doesn't even have Dragon Princes, because why? When Silver
Helms come in the starter box, the Battle Force.
Yeah, it's true. And a unit of 9! Wow, that's fantastic. What a great unit size.
Yeah, pretty much. No, hey, guess what?
8-man frontage again on the Spearman unit.
That Jesus, was my other thing.
That must be the new black.
Why wouldn't you make him a horde? You're going to do a frontage of 8. Why wouldn't you make him a horde? And look, he's only got 10 Lothran Seaguard. 10. Because
that's what's in the starter set. You know, the worst part is, I mean, High Elf Spears already fight in 4 ranks. So, I mean, make them 10 wide. Give this unit another, 10, 14 guys, which is 130-ish points. Mm-hmm. And now you have a block of 50 with 50 guys that attack.
Yep. Yep. So then you move on, and it's basically just, hey, look at every single box that you can buy. Look how awesome this is to put in the rules. Masterclass painting, blah, blah, blah.
What do you mean, more masterclass painting? Oh, so there's not a masterclass. It's just like mini porn. Look at how nice these models are, and you could never hope to paint it.
Oh, dude, the muscles on that griffin. Oh, dude, did you see that? Look how tough those muscles are, so hot.
Dude, that Skaven's tail.
Griffin porn is the shit. Okay, so moving on. Let's finish this shit up. Let's finish this up, because I'm sure
as we are bored with the White Dwarf, our listeners are turning off the podcast at this point.
Okay. Listener. Our listener.
Our listener. Our listener and...
Hi, Mom.
So then this is where the White Dwarf kind of starts to feel like a bit of a blog, because at this point we've had a couple of people talking about how awesome they are and how great their armies are and how it's totally super awesome. Yeah. So this gentleman, Adam, is talking about the monster of competitive gaming versus, like, how to not let competitive gaming ruin your gaming experience for you and your opponent. This entire two-page blog can be summed up to, don't be a fucking dick. And that's really all it is. He's just like, remember what you love. For me, this is imagining the action being played out on a battlefield, whether it's the staccato bark of bolters or the incandescent fury of a fire wizard. I love imagining the battle. If you ever find yourself going off the deep end, remember what you love. And it's just like, you know what? That is the most trite fantasy world piece of shit I have ever heard. Listen, I'm sure the guy's a nice guy and he's trying to do something good here, but, like, I mean, that's like going up to your friend who just had his fiance run away from him on the altar on their wedding day and just be like, well, you know, there's plenty of fish in the sea.
And that girl was a whore anyway.
She was a whore anyways. Fuck her. No, it just, it's all very pointless and trite, and it's kind of stupid, and it's like there's a nugget of wisdom here and there, but for the most part, it's like, who are you talking to? Who is your audience right now? Like, really?
Well, the worst part is I think he's trying to talk to the gamers that were created as a result of Games Workshop's Ard Boys tournament.
Well, that's probably...
That they continue to support.
I like how the very last point is he's just like, okay, so it's totally like the dirty secret, the monster is lose, which is internet fail. remember what you love, don't be a smarty pants, don't be a rules monkey, share the victory, and everyone is a winner. Gold star. Gold star for you, Nathan.
You know,
Mike Frank beat me in our game against my orcs, even though he was saved by the bell, and the only way he can win is by fighting my least good army that I haven't played in 4 years or in 8th edition.
See, I knew you were –
I had deleted it. No. We actually had a great game. It was a total meat grinder at the end. I had a bunch of rounds of bad combat, but it turned out being a draw, and his Death Star-ish unit was left on the table. But his detachments destroyed me. Like, all my chariots were killed by, like, two detachments. It was ridiculous. But, no, it was a great game. Actually, I told Mike that I would read this here, so I'm going to go to my phone real quick.
Oh.
He says, I know your podcast tonight will be fairly one-sided with regards to our game, so if you could just throw in this for me at the end of your rant. Defeat has no explanation. Victory allows none. Thanks. I had an awesome night. Mention this too. It was fantastic to game with somebody who had a fully painted army and wasn't retarded. Thanks. Hey, high praise. High praise. Moving on.
You so know, basically, I expected the painted army praise, but that last point is very generous of Mike.
Well, I painted two Snotling pump wagons, and then the next day I painted a unit of three trolls in like 4 hours. They actually turned out quite good. I'll post some pictures of the game that we had on the site after we're done, so people can kind of see what's going on. So basically, moving on, the last pile of pages is more figure porn and sales and directory. Golden Demon, again, that's the third Golden Demon ad we've seen. More store stuff, more directory, and like the last page is more sales once again. Throwing that in the garbage... Now, I can honestly say that it felt like I was reading a Games Workshop catalog. It really didn't feel like I was reading a White Dwarf. There was seven pages of something worth reading, and the rest of it was garbage.
Yeah, and I was going to say, unlike other magazines with you know, pretty women in them, there really was no redeeming qualities. The worst part is this White Dwarf is very par for the course nowadays.
Yes.
And actually what is funny is I was surprised to see that there was only 10 pages dedicated to new releases until I looked at it and realized that there was one page of new releases and 9 pages of buy this shit that's been out for years.
Right.
You know, because last month when the Dark Eldar were released, because it was their issue, there was, and I'm not kidding or exaggerating, 40 pages of new release.
Wow. Yeah.
Because, you know, and that's why I was just like, I was a little bit surprised to see it was so small, because I was going to make a comment about it. And I was like, hey, wait a minute. No.
Yeah.
This is actually reasonable.
Yeah. No, the White Dwarf, I mean, this issue has done nothing to make me want to start picking up the White Dwarf again, unfortunately. I feel like, you know, somebody who's very new to the hobby would pick this up and it would all seem very golden to them. But it's like a house with, you know, it's like an 80-year-old house with just a fresh coat of paint. You know, it just, as soon as you get inside and you start looking around, you start real, you know, you live in it for 3 weeks and all of a sudden you start realizing all this shit that's wrong with it.
Yeah.
It gets very old very quickly. And, you know, after the fourth or fifth battle, sixth battle report, I was just saying, like, have they just run out of ideas? Is this all there is to it? Is they give a couple of guys the opportunity to blog who really shouldn't be blogging, and then they fill in the rest of the time with scenery, sales, and battle reports. And if you're lucky, you get a bit of fluff and, like, expansion that goes on along with it, apparently.
Look, first of all, I want to say this. I've only ever bought one issue of White Dwarf in my life.
Yeah.
And that was way back when they put, like, gargantuan creature rules in and, like, the spike rifle for Tyranids.
Yeah.
Way back in, like, 03 or 04.
Spike rifle.
I
love that.
I have, you know, as an employee of Games Workshop, you're given a White Dwarf. And as a tournament organizer, I also have a subscription. So, I mean, I have always likened the White Dwarf to herpes. Just as soon as you think you've gotten rid of it and you're in the clear, it flares up again and there it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like I said, when I left Games Workshop in Edmonton, I was like, I will never read a White Dwarf again. And then I got... And then I went back to the company and I started getting it again. And I was just like, God damn it. And then again, I left the company and I was just like, finally, it'll be done. And then, you know, I ran a tournament and then out of the blue, you know, we kind of got added to their tournament circuit. And they're like, congratulations, because you're on our tournament circuit, here's a White Dwarf subscription. And I'm just like, you have got to be kidding me. So, I mean, I think I've thrown away probably 50 issues of the White Dwarf, and I have only ever paid for one, and I'm just like, I can't get rid of it.
I think the thing that I miss the most about the White Dwarf is the rules, like the new rules, like, hey everybody, here's a unit that we thought you might enjoy. It's not really legal, but you can play some games with it and have some fun. You know, Rhinox Riders.
I miss the chapter approved where
chapter approved was the bomb.
No, but not even the compendium ones, but in White Dwarf, you get that chapter approved stamp, and that meant that it was 100% game legal.
So it meant totally forgot about chapter approved, dude.
Yeah, so it meant that I could go in and I could read that article, say, this unit is the shit, I'm going to convert it, because it's not like they ever released models for it.
No, you had to convert. That was always the deterrent to people abusing the chapter approved, was it was just like, in most cases for chapter approved, it was, you know... it was a conversion of some sort, but, you know, I remember showing up to Vets Nights, and we talked about Vets Nights a little bit before, but I remember showing up, and I'd have four or five issues of the White Dwarf. I mean, my Ogre army right now has two issues of the White Dwarf that I keep because of the chapter-approved rules for Rhinox Riders, you know what I mean? And other stuff that goes along with it. So now I look at this, and, you know, like, I don't know if they've even done anything like that in such a long time. But no, it's a white dwarf is a big thumbs down. I'm going to go ahead and kick us past this here. Why, you might ask? Why? Because we have mail, Nathan. We have mail.
Really?
Yes, we do have mail. I'm going to read you some mail, Nathan.
Now, are you sure this is legit mail and it's not a Viagra spam?
Oh, it's legit. It is legit.
All
do
right,
you
do
want to be bigger and harder and last longer, Nathan? No, your answer should have been like, not possible, and no. But, okay, so this is greetings from Copenhagen in Denmark. Christian, he says, hi guys, I love your show. It is the only podcast I regularly follow. I enjoy your adult take on the hobby. Thank you, sir, I appreciate it. What lessons from wargaming and the hobby in general have you learned that are applicable in your lives outside of the hobby? Keep up the great work, Christian from Copenhagen. I'm just going to go right into that and just say community. The hobby is built around community. I mean, there are hobbies that are built around not having a community. And this is definitely the one that, you know, we talk about sportsmanship and we talk about all of these different things with regards to, like, being good to your opponent, having respect for them, and essentially taking the hobby, not necessarily taking it seriously, but, you know, giving it your attention in the proper way, as opposed to just kind of like skirting around to get to the win and being overly competitive. So I think, you know, what I've taken away from it is definitely the community. The majority of my friends that I have here in the country of Countrystan, I got from wargaming and Warhammer and that whole community. So, you know, it's the community that I feel is my biggest takeaway from the entire hobby as a whole.
Yeah, you know, and kind of on that vein, I would like to say that the social aspects of the hobby, because, I mean, you know, tying into community, if I go to a tournament or I go to a vets night, odds are good that I'm going to play someone that I've never met before. And this is a hobby that teaches you basically, you know, how to be respectful to these strangers, introduce yourself, talk to them, strike up conversations, because at the end of the day, we all play the game. There is that sort of social lubricant. There's that commonality where at least if you start talking about Warhammer, you know, let them open up and loosen up. And I mean, yeah, I'm with Lang. Almost all of my friends that I have are a result of the hobby. In fact, earlier this evening, I was at a Christmas party that was basically just people that play Warhammer, you mm-hmm. know, that we're all friends with. So, I mean, you know, we just sort of chilled and did a potluck Secret Santa kind of thing. And like I said, every one of them is involved in the hobby or is dating someone that's involved in the hobby. Yeah. So, I mean,
right on.
So, you know, so that's really what I like to take out of it to my daily lives, because I mean, I remember years ago before the hobby, I hated talking to strangers. It was just one of those things where you're just like, but I don't know him, fuck him.
Yeah.
You know, but thanks to the hobby, thanks to those sort of games against strangers, you know, like that, like that's the thing. It's just like I went to a tournament down in Neighborstan. And, you know, I went there knowing only my wife and my friend that came with me. And I left with a whole crap ton more Facebook friends and friends and, right. you know, all that. And
that's, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, like the game that Mike and I had, you know, Mike, him and I, we haven't even seen each other. And I would say probably a year, maybe two. We haven't played each other in easily 2 years. You know, we each had children in the span of time since we last played each other. You know what I mean? Like, it has been a long fucking time. Dude comes over, brings a bottle of scotch. We sit down, we have a game. It's like we never left, you know, like that's what's good about it. You know, like we both play armies. We're both dedicated. We know what we're talking about. Which is even the stupidity check for this week for me is people who have the armies, but have no idea what they're doing. To the point where, as Mike says, you're not only playing your own army, you're playing their army. Because you're constantly like, what are they? What do they do? And the guy looks at his sheet and he goes, corn? And then he goes to his rule book and he flips.
You know, we even talked about
three turns later, they're like, wait a second, I should have been using great weapons on this unit. Oh, man, you know. It's just like, listen, people, if you're going to play the game, read the rules. Like you said, like we said when Kyle was back on the show, we assume that our listeners can read, but we know there are fucking gamers out there who don't read. Read your books, learn your fucking rules. I mean, I hadn't played my orcs in three or four years, I would say. Easily, I have not played my orcs. 2 weeks before our game, I read that book three times. And I'm not talking all the fluff and shit, but like the rules, the special items, the special abilities, all that shit. Like I knew what I was doing when I went into it. Like there was no question about like this does this and that does that. This is the way that it works. So I think for a lot of people, that's a failed stupidity check. If you show up to the table and you don't know what your shit does, you're ruining the game for everybody.
So, yeah, that one, agreed. That was the failed stupidity check provided by Mike after he beat my ogres. But, you know, he was saved. Orcs. He was, oh, my ogres. He was saved by the bell. He was saved by the bell. Anyways, I'm going to go ahead and get to one more email here. This is from Dana. Dana says, hello. He says, geriatric gamers. Oh, shut up, Dana. Anyways, he says, I was just wondering what you two think about Wound Allocation, the Wound Allocation rule in Warhammer 40,000, and what you think it is supposed to symbolize in the game. I can't get my head around it. Is it supposed to represent something in real life combat? I can't figure out what. Also, as a side question, why do you two and others I know have a sore spot for fetish marines? Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is Jaded Gamercast for this week. That is a whole other episode that we have planned, so I definitely am not going to answer that question now. And since he started off by calling us geriatric gamers, go to hell, Dana. But thanks for the emails.
If we're so geriatric, we have to go to bed now. I'm sorry. That's we're completely true. Out of time.
I wake up four times a night just to pee. No. But yes, this is that. That is Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
And I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.